About marriage, Mae West once said, "Marriage is a great institution, but I'm not ready for an institution yet." However, by not getting married, Mae West missed out on a bonanza of benefits provided by both the government and business. Most of us who are married take the legal advantages of marriage for granted. The government has packed into marriage many special deals, from immigration and citizenship to military service, tax policy, and property rules. Legal marriage offers several specific economic benefits to marriage over living with someone. For example, married couples can obtain family, health, dental, and other insurance benefits. The exact rules on this vary, but generally, if you are not married, it is much more difficult to obtain insurance through a partner's employment. Being able to obtain such insurance reduces the cost of the insurance for both members of the household. In addition, if your partner dies before you and you are married, you are likely to continue to receive some benefit from his or her retirement and Social Security. If you are unmarried, you do not get any of these benefits. Marriage laws even help if you decide to get divorced. A married person has the right to receive property settlements and support if there is a divorce. If you are just living together and your partner's name is on the lease, you may suddenly find all your stuff tossed out in the yard. Your options then are limited. If you are relying on your partner to support you and he or she tells you to get out, you have very few legal rights. The belief that married people pay more taxes because of a so-called marriage penalty, that belief is only partially true. Dual income, high earning married sometimes suffer the penalty. But for more than half of all spouses, particularly those with children, marriage actually slashes tax bills. In our society, laws transfer wealth to the married class. Laws impose an array of taxes on singles, no matter how many people they care for or are dependent on them. A married couple pays much less towards basic living costs. For example, on average, only 9% of a couple's gross income goes for rent, compared with 23% for a single person. A couple pays less for food and utilities. Auto insurers place married couple in a lower risk class, saving them money on car insurance. One study estimates that unmarried people make an average of 25% less than married colleagues for the same work. This is because of the marriage-centered structure of our health care, our retirement, and other benefits. School taxes and growing inequities in pensions between married and singles represent a big bonus for married couples. The unmarried are often subject to discrimination in housing and credit applications. Often gyms, country clubs, and hotel rooms provide discounts for couples, but not for singles. In some states, laws restrict unmarried people from taking on roommates to help pay the rent. The many legal and financial rewards that come with being married are a part of the reason that gay and lesbian couples have expressed an interest in same-sex marriages. They seek marriage for the same reason that ex-slaves wanted to marry after the Civil War. They want access to basic civil rights. The exclusion of same-sex partners from the right to marry stigmatizes their relationship. The exclusion reinforces the supremacy of heterosexuals over homosexuals. In the same way, laws banning marriages across the color line reinforced white supremacy. All my adult life, I have watched the debate over marriage laws. By the 1970s, Unitarian Universalist clergy were openly officiating at same-sex marriages. There were same-sex marriages before the 1970s, but because it was illegal to be a homosexual in most states, they were kept private and secret. Many such services took place in the 1970s, but the state did not recognize these religious services as legal marriages. They're not illegal marriages when they take place without the state recognizing them, but they're are not legal either. They're religious ceremonies, in the same way that baptizing a child is a religious ceremony. Then 11 years ago, things started to change. On November 18th, 2003, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruled that same-sex couples have a right to marry. Five of the seven couples involved in the court decision were Unitarian Universalists. This was the beginning of a trend. Today, 19 states and the District of Columbia legally recognize the right of same-sex marriages to occur. However, Florida is not yet one of those states. 6 years ago, November 4th, 2008, Florida voters approved a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage and civil unions in this state. Passage required approval by 60% of the voters because it was a constitutional amendment, and 62% of the voters voted for it. Nevertheless, in the last few months, five Florida judges have overturned this ban. The judges have ruled that the same-sex marriage ban violates the federal Constitution's 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law. The Florida Attorney General has filed appeals. So the debate continues. In one of the most interesting articles I have read on this topic, an article by the magazine, newspaper, and online columnist Michael Kinsley, published in 2003. Kinsley wrote in the online news magazine Slate, "We can add gay marriage to the short list of controversies, abortion, affirmative action, the death penalty, that are so frozen and ritualistic that debates about them are more like performances than intellectual exercises. Or we can think outside the box, to use a cliche. The solution is to end marriage. Let churches and other religious institutions continue to offer marriage ceremonies. Let each organization decide for itself what kinds of couples it wants to offer marriage to. Let couples celebrate their union in any way they choose and consider themselves married whenever they want. Let others be free to consider them not married under rules these others may prefer. If marriage were an entirely private affair, all the disputes over gay marriage would become irrelevant. Gay marriage would not have the official sanction of the government, but neither would straight marriage." Well, in response to this article, supporters defended the current system by arguing that a wedding license is a legal contract that gives order to our society. Marriage declares that the state now recognizes two individuals as a unit to which rights and privileges are granted relating to property. This is a key ingredient in providing a stable and financially secure home for children. If one of the two parties should die, his or her survivor is automatically entitled to the deceased property, unless there is some will that says otherwise. Surviving spouses have custodial authority over any children automatically with our current marriage laws. In these ways, states regulate marriages to give structure to our community. Well, in spite of this, through a process of individual choice, Americans are gradually moving away from these state-approved marriages. Ironically, just as same-sex couples are finally gaining the right to have a legal marriage, most heterosexuals, not most, more heterosexuals, are choosing not to apply for a wedding license. Wednesday, a story appeared in a newspaper interviewing a woman named Melissa Coppola. Melissa is 34 and single. She never plans to marry or have children. She is in a committed relationship. But what is the point of spending all that money on a wedding, she asks. She doesn't like the idea of women changing their names or of the ownership qualities associated with marriage. My boyfriend and I are committed to each other. We just don't feel the need to get married. Melissa, who works in New Hampshire, and her boyfriend Jack live together. They plan their finances and travel together. They have talked about spending their lives together and even plan for retirement together. The only way they would consider marriage, she said, is if it someday made financial sense for tax purposes, or in the event that one needed to care for the other and hospitals were sticklers about visitation rights. I feel like a lot of people are getting married because it's an old tradition, Melissa said, or because of guilt. Washington Post, September 24th, 2004. Recent Census Bureau data shows that Melissa is an example of a trend. In 1976, 37% of Americans were single. Today, more than half of the people in the United States are single. And the capital of the single lifestyle is Gainesville, Florida. 62% of the population there is single. Now, we might call this change in relationship between marriage and the state the disestablishment of marriage. The term disestablishment comes from religious history. Historians called a national church supported by taxes the established religion. So when you have a country where you have taxes that support the established church, that is established religion. Disestablishment comes when the government stops collecting taxes to support religion. Now, that doesn't mean that churches disappear. In fact, more often, religious groups increase in number when the state does not support one particular religion. Now, in the same way, I am suggesting that the particular model of marriage that was for so long the government-sponsored model now should be disestablished. Of course, Congress and the 50 state legislatures are unlikely to vote to disestablish marriage. Nevertheless, the disestablishment of marriage is happening in the United States in a process of unorganized mass civil disobedience. Consider, in 1950, married couples represented 78% of households in the United States. 1950, 78%. Today, married couples represent 48% of American households. Married couples with kids, which made up nearly every household a century ago, now total just 20%. In 1960, 5% of children were born to single mothers. 5% in 1960. Today, 40% of children are born to single moms. The situation today is similar to the way things were in 18th century America. 300 years ago, most people lived on farms away from cities. Getting access to an official who could legally perform a marriage was difficult. Access to a minister or to a justice of the peace. Therefore, before 1750, most people did not have a marriage ceremony. And there was no wedding. Couples lived together and declared to their family and friends that they were married. The church, the state, and friends and family accepted that they were validly married. We know from genealogical records that in colonial America, more than 50% of the time, the official date given for that declaration of marriage was less than 9 months before the birth of the first child in the family. Pregnancy or childbirth was the signal for a couple to consider themselves married. In the 1700s, a minister in Maryland said, "If no marriage should be deemed valid that has not been registered in the parish book, it would, I am persuaded, bastardize 9/10 of the people in the county." Before the American Civil War, each local community policed their own rules about marriage, allowing for some diversity in human relationships. However, 150 years ago, the American Civil War changed marriage in our society. The war killed more Americans than any other war the nation has ever entered, an average of 182 deaths for every 10,000 people. Now, compare that to World War II, an average of 30 deaths per 10,000 people in the United States. On both sides of the war between the states, husbands and fathers were dead. A generation of women became widows. During the war, Congress had authorized soldiers' pensions. These pensions for the soldiers' widows became the major federal expenditure, taking 40% of the federal government's budget by 1893. Now, because many of these widows from the Civil War had no marriage license, officials gave credit to informal marriages. But Americans realized that the government might not be so generous in the future. To protect the possibility of future military pension income for widowers, after the Civil War, most couples obtained a marriage license from the local county courthouse. So when I hear people say that they believe in that traditional marriage, I want to point out that the so-called traditional marriage, as we understand it, is only 150 years old. Today, more and more couples are reverting to the way our ancestors handled coupling in America before the Civil War. They are moving into relationships without a license. They are foregoing the legal benefits of a marriage license because they choose not to have the government interfere in their private relationship. Still, I understand and I support the desire to make same-sex marriage legal. Gay and lesbian couples should have the right to the legal benefits of marriage. If they wish to choose that route, they have my support. I believe that marriage is a basic right that should not be discriminated against because of gender, even in Florida. I believe that American values of liberty and the pursuit of happiness should apply to couples who have same-sex relationships, even in Florida. I see no threat to other families in allowing two adults of the same sex to make a legal commitment to each other, even here in Florida. Monday, the United States Supreme Court will return from its summer recess. What a long summer recess. Well, it's been a long time since a Unitarian was Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. Tomorrow, in their private Supreme Court conference room, only the Supreme Court justices in the room, 6 practicing Roman Catholics and 3 practicing Jews, they will meet. They will discuss whether to consider appeals originating from same-sex couples in 5 states, Utah, Oklahoma, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Indiana. Now, the court hurried to schedule this meeting tomorrow, to schedule these appeals at the meeting tomorrow from the 5 states, even before the lawyers had filed all the legal briefs. And this suggests that the justices are ready to add this issue to their docket. It only takes 4 justices to vote to put such petitions on the docket, but it takes 5 votes to make a decision. If they accept these petitions for review tomorrow, they will likely hold oral arguments early next year, with a decision expected by late June 2015. It is an interesting time to be alive in the United States. Meanwhile, while we wait for the Supreme Court to rule about the definition of government-approved marriages, let us give thanks for the fact that we live in a time and in a place where we are free to join in relationships with whomever we wish, as long as we do not abuse each other. Of course, whatever the legal status of our relationship, coupling is never easy. Consider the story of a woman and a man who interrupted their honeymoon to go to the dentist. I want a tooth pulled, and I don't want any Novocaine, no painkillers, because I'm in a big hurry to get back to our honeymoon, the woman said. Just extract the tooth as quickly as possible, and we'll be on our way. The dentist was quite impressed. You're a courageous woman, he said. Which tooth is it? The woman turned to her husband and said, "Show him your tooth, dear."